Oh, Don. Fun stuff.
Yes.
I always like telling you my fish stories.
Yeah. And we'll dig deeper into that later.
You didn't believe me.
No, we need confirmation.
Well, we'll get confirmation. I'm not worried about that. Well, and we always, we don't need confirmation for the fact that we want you guys to check us out on Facebook. Like us, please. And of course, check us out on thevalleyoutdoors.com for all the cool links and all the fun stuff from everybody we have on the show. And speaking of having somebody on the show, this guy's not a somebody and he's not a nobody. He's the man. The man, the myth, the legend, the just recent winner of the National Walleye Tour event out of Mobridge and the National Sales Manager for Warrior Boats, a good friend of mine, Kent Anderson. And do I bow in your presence now, Kent?
Absolutely not. but thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Not a problem, buddy. And, you know, it's something about the Dakotas. I won on that body of water myself. And I know it's a challenge. It can be one of those touch-and-go things with the wind, the waves, and everything else. So you won the National Walleye Tour event out there. Big, big flight of or a group of anglers out there. Obviously, the best of the best in the walleye world is out there. Run us through the pre-fish, because I'm back home drooling, clawing, pulling my hair out, nails, the whole nine yards, because I'm wishing I could be out there. Fill me in. How did pre-fish go? Now we can talk about it. How did everything go?
Well, a couple weeks before we went out there, the fishing was just sounded like it was an absolute slugfest, and it was close to Mobridge, and everything was looking like it was going to be a blast. But in walleye tournament fashion, things changed, and the fish used their fins, and they moved a little bit, and so we got out there in our first day of practice. You know, we basically put our lines in and just started trolling. Adam covered one side of the river. I covered the other side.
Now, Adam's your brother.
Adam's my brother. Right. We've fished together, traveled together on the NWT. This will be our third year doing that. And, I mean, before that, we've been fishing tournaments together since we were, I don't know, I think we fished our first crappie tournament together when he was 16 and I was 14, and we slid our boat we called the Sieve across the lawn at Airwood up at Alexandria, Minnesota, and down to a little pond where the crappies came into spawn and went and caught crappies, and we hauled that around too in a nice station wagon. So that was we've been fishing together for a long time, and we always found a way to get on the water. So it's been fun traveling with them. We went out there and we basically, you know, you can drive around, you can use your electronics all you want, but at the end of the day, if you're fishing in the trees or whatnot, a lot of times, like, I feel okay if I was going to fish points, I feel perfect confident to go cruise up on the points and be like, yeah, there's no fish on, move on.
Yep.
But fishing the break lines or fishing the trees like we fished, I feel the best way to cover it is to fish it. So that's kind of what we did. We went in, put our lines in, and I think the first day I caught three legal fish. I had one that was like 14 inches. I caught a 25 incher and a 28 and a half incher. So two of the right fish. Well, Adam slugged them the first day, and he caught them across, or caught them where we fished on. He fished the both days of the tournament. I fished day two there. And
last time
he smoked them. I mean, he had a 31 and a half, 28, two 26s, and like a couple other low 20s and some good slots and three passes. And I was like,
this is candy.
Yeah, we'll put that in the memory bank for later in the week. And so the next day we get out and we continued our journey downstream. We kind of started up by town and just probably 20 miles south of takeoff is where we started that first day, and then started working our way down. And you can cover a lot of water in a day trolling at 2.3 miles an hour, and you don't really realize how much you cover until the end of the day, and when it's time to drive back in, it's like, huh, going away. So we continued down the stream on the next day. Well, that was that day the Akaska tournament was going on, and he fished again the east side of the river. I fished the west side of the river. We started down by the bridge, down by Whitlocks, and actually trolled north that day. And the results of day one of that tournament were not very appetizing. Like, you're looking at it and you go, okay, maybe we didn't do so bad yesterday. And something happened to the fishing because it was pretty tough. I think there was 60-some teams in that tournament, and there was 2 7-fish limits because they could weigh 7 fish. So there was only 2 7-fish limits, and Chad Schilling was in it, and he zeroed, and I'm like, man, that's something to be said, that the fishing has to be pretty tough. So you put that in your memory bank, and then you continue on the week, and you know it came really fast to be seen that the trees was the place to be. We got down in that mid-river from Sutton Bay to Cheyenne and did a lot of jig wrapping and caught some nice fish.
So slow down a second. Now, talking trees, this is I think people have to realize trees that you're talking about, they're not sticking out of the water.
No.
These trees, you're over, what, 100 feet of water, right? 50 feet of water maybe?
Yeah, the trees were in 85 to 100 feet, and the tops of them were anywhere from 50 feet from the surface down, so you're talking, you know, in 100 feet, that's a 50-foot tall tree. You know, these are big trees, and what they are is the big cottonwoods, and it still amazes me that you can have these nice, beautiful trees down there, and I mean, they look like a forest because that's what they were, and then you look around on shore in South Dakota, and you scratch your head, and you're like,
nothing.
Huh, they can't grow trees like this anymore, or what? But they're down there, and they're still standing, and you know, if wood's underwater, it'll stay there for 100 years and or more, or whatever. It doesn't rot until it gets air. So those trees are solid. When you hook them with a crankbait, they're not going to move. So either you normally straighten your hooks out and they pop loose, or you break your line. So we did lots of tying. I got really good at tying crankbaits on. So
how many?
Nice.
This is always a fun part. How many crankbaits did you lose in a day in the tournament?
You know, not as many as what some people say, and I wouldn't exaggerate it. I mean, I'd say day one, I probably only down where the trees south of the 212 bridge that I was right. My key area. Those trees were actually pretty nice. They were mostly pretty level. There's a few high spots, but those ones weren't bad at all. I mean, you lost some crankbaits, and I probably lost a dozen baits on day one. I probably caught 40 walleyes day one. Day two, I went and fished the trees north of the bridge. Now, those trees weren't as friendly. they were kind of angry, and they took a lot of stuff. So, like, I fished them for 2.5 hours on day two, and I probably went through 15 baits. I mean, I would say those trees were like a 6 to 12 crankbaits an hour, where the ones south of the trees were like 1 to 3, or south of the bridge were like 1 to 3. So after I had my two overs on day one, even though I knew there was good slots up there, I elected to go back down south where I fished on day one, where, I mean, I had...
Productive time.
Yep, and I had 12. I mean, I know I had 12 fish from 14 to 19.5 inches on day one, and it was... When I had the overs I had, I just needed to get 5 fish, and then from there I'd worry about catching bigger fish, and... We had they did drop the limit to 12 inches. I did not keep anything under 14 inches for the tournament, which is good, which is, I think, a big help to where I got in it. You know, even day two, after I had those two big fish, I had a couple like 13.5, 13.75, and I'm like, yeah, maybe I should, but no.
You throw it over and you're like, should I have done that?
A little
that?
Bit you do, and then you yep. go like a half hour without a bite, and you're like, did all right, really
so
just do that?
Let's jump to the key. What were you using to do that? Leadcore, probably.
I was using Leadcore, and then I was using also 8-ounce snap weights, and I was running. So two things that I probably feel that we did different than a lot is with our Leadcore. You know, traditionally you're going to run 10 color Leadcore, 100 yards.
Yep.
So with the depths that the trees were, and a lot of people have been running snap weights on braid and that type of stuff. And I just, you know, told myself, like, I want to use Leadcore because I know there's times where the action of Leadcore is going to outfish snap weights. I've learned this on Lake of the Woods. I've learned it many places where there's some days the snap weights are going to outperform. There's some days the lead's going to outperform. So I wanted to be able to make sure I could fish Leadcore in 50 feet of water. Well, in order to do that, you're on the verge with 10 colors. So I got myself some big big reels. I actually got Penn Warfare 30s, and I love the Warfares for pulling lead core, and I could put 200 yards on easily. And so I put spooled them up with 200 yards, and that way when you snagged up in a tree, you had
extra
line to let out before you to break off. And I never did. I think I only broke one lead off in the whole week I was there, and that was when I made the attempt to try to fish and spinner baits down lower into the cottonwood trees, and that did not. The cottonwood trees won that battle. It lasted about a matter of about maybe 10, but I'm going to say 5 minutes during practice, and I had the guy with me. He travels with me, Corey McKay, and I go, "How is it over there?" He goes, "Oh, my heart stopped a couple times. It snuck up. They snaked up pretty good." And I'm like, "This might actually work." And I didn't more or less get it out of my mouth and snagged up and broke the line at the reel. And I'm like, "All right, we're done with spinner baits. We're going back to crankbaits."
What'd you use for crankbaits? That's the big key. Everybody's going to be going, I used
flicker minnows, some flicker shads, jointed shad wraps, and we even used a few of the Walleye Nation Creation Reapers. So, but I would say, hands down, if I was to pick one bait to go back there with today, I'd take number 11 flicker minnows.
Mm-hmm. Well, it matches the bait out there, too, in a big way.
It does, and I think that's where, like, that what was a little different with that Reaper, too, is it. The bait's about the length of a number 11 flicker minnow, but it had a thicker profile.
Yep.
And that herring's, you know, a lot thicker than smelt. So trying to be there, and then you talk about the, okay, now you caught him on a number 5 jointed shad wrap. Well, that doesn't tie with anything other than the fact that jointed shad wraps catch walleyes
everywhere.
And if you were to pick one, I was to pick one crankbait, that would be the one I would pick.
Well, you know, and that's the funny part about it. If people are saying, okay, well, what do I have to have? You're talking about all these different baits. And literally, it is true. The bait that you would use to go anywhere, Lake of the Woods, same thing, lead core.
Yep.
I mean, so yep. No matter where you go, whether you're on the river, you're on the lake, whether you're a western reservoir, it doesn't matter. That thing, it just absolutely performs no matter where you go. It is interesting. And then it's a matter of variances of that are, you know, different varieties of that type of bait. But, yeah, it makes it interesting. Well, Kent, what's your biggest takeaway? Before we wrap up, what's your biggest takeaway from the win?
I don't know. It's an amazing experience, I guess. Where it happened, it couldn't be any better.
No.
You know, with that being the last place I fished tournament with or against my dad, last place I seen him alive at the resort we stayed. So it was almost surreal. I mean, the way the last day shook out, I mean, we had some excitement with that 12-pounder I caught. I mean, we had it in the net, out of the net, but we landed it and still got it in the boat to stop at a spot on my way in to catch a 19-incher. Like, that stuff is just, when it's your day, it's your day.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely had extra help that day, and I guess that would be, you know, my biggest thing from it was just the experience, and to go 1-2 with my brother. I mean, that day is going to be hard to ever duplicate.
Yeah, the year my dad died, and that last year, finished second for Angler of the Year, that was a year that you thought you had, there was definitely somebody helping you out. It's pretty amazing feeling. And I know the last time that I fished against your dad, we'd always meet up on a point, he'd be trolling, he'd just keep trolling lead. And I'd say, "Hey, Dave, good to see you again." I'd pull forward a little ways down the lake, and you stop, I'd be fishing. There he comes, trolling the lead core. "Hey, Dave, good to see you. Where have you been?" So. Yeah. Proud of you, buddy. That's so awesome, and it really is nice to see both you and your brother doing it on the body of water that you did. It's really a really cool story. So, can't thank you enough for joining us today. It's awesome, buddy.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You be good.
Congratulations.
And good luck with the Warrior Boat program. He's also the national sales manager of Warrior Boat, so make sure you check out Warrior. Great boat to be on the tour. Big water, little water, doesn't matter. They are fishing machines. So have a good one, Kent. We certainly appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
You be good.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, we will be back with more Valley Outdoors right after this. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic Invasive Species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference. Kind of cool to hear and see and talk about Kent. He's a really good guy.
I mean, that's absolutely an amazing feat when you think about it. Two brothers winning the top two spots. The odds of that are pretty slim.
They are. And you know, they learned from one of the best guys out there,
yep,
without question. Kent Anderson really took after, both he and Adam took after his dad, David. And yeah, sad to lose David, you know, a number of years ago, and but left a legacy.
He did, question. You know, well, he trained him well.
He did. Story to wrap up the show today. An angler sets a record with a blue catfish that, quote-unquote, looked like a baby whale. A North Carolina fisherman waited several hours through the night and into the early morning hours before getting the official weight of a blue catfish he caught on the Roanoke River. Rocky Baker's catch wound up being 127.1 pounds and was certified as a North Carolina record, surpassing the previous state record by more than 5 pounds. The old record, 121 pounds, was caught in 2020. This is the funny part about this story. They knew when they hooked it, it was instantly there was going to be a great fish. They were thinking 80 pounds. Fought it for 30 minutes, crossed back over the river three or four times. And once they got it in the boat, they attempted to weigh it, but the 110-pound scale bottomed out. Point was, they went to the tackle shop at 1:15 in the morning, put the fish in an outdoor bait tank, contacted the owner and the biologist. They arrived at 4 to 4:30 in the morning, talked to them, confirmed the catch, and then drove more than an hour back to Goldsboro so that they could actually get the fish, put it in the water, and released it. So he got a state record. It was actually in person. And he got to release it, so it's out swimming.
That is very cool.
Yeah, I thought that was a tremendous story and a great way to really wrap up the show, but also really shows conservation-minded guys out there. So way to go, guys. Really cool. So really cool that you guys joined us as well. Don, Ava, myself, Eric, we are glad to have you guys with us. And, yeah, check us out next week. It's going to be fun. See ya.